Welcome back to the program. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Desi Simmons. A press conference held today on a state bill that prohibits foreign laws from being instituted in Michigan. State Representative Rashida Tlaib, the first Muslim woman to serve in the legislature, saying the bill is, quote, taking a community and casting suspicion on them, targeting them, and it's completely wrong. To discuss the Muslim community's response to the legislation, I'm joined by Dawood Waleed. He's the executive director of the Michigan branch of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, who attended today's event. Welcome to the program, Dawood.
Thank you very much, sir.
Now, Representative Dave Ajima, the sponsor of the legislation, was on the program yesterday. He said that his bill makes no mention of any particular law or group, but rather ensures that state and federal laws are not superseded by other ones. Why is there a sense that Muslims are being targeted here?
Well, we have to go back in history to how these anti-Sharia laws were brought about in the first place. It was a ballot proposal that was brought back in Oklahoma in November of last year that was approved that basically made foreign laws or our courts, arbiters, mediators, or administrative agencies within the state of Michigan to not consider any foreign laws or foreign systems of law, including Sharia, and that passed in a ballot proposal. My national organization later challenged it in court on the basis that it was unconstitutional, and now that ballot proposal, though about 70% of Oklahomans voted in favor of it, is not the law of the land. Similarly, in other states, there was later anti-Sharia legislation that was passed, that was put forth in the houses, most notable being Tennessee, and based upon the constitutional questions, the term Sharia was left out, but it still used the basic same language.
Now, these lawmakers across the country that are backing these types of bills, apparently they're concerned that for Muslims, Sharia law is the most sacred law. Are these legislators misunderstanding something?
Well, I think there's two misunderstandings. First, the term Sharia doesn't even mean law, and if one were to read the most authoritative writings that have been written about Sharia from Islamic scholars, Sharia just means the path, literally a path towards watering hole. But Sharia is just a way that a Muslim lives life to please God. I mean, that's exactly what the term Sharia means. It doesn't mean jurisprudence. There's vast, various interpretations. There is no one set thing or no one set Islamic legal code. So that's one misnomer. The second misnomer is even in terms of our jurisprudence, we have different schools of thought and jurisprudence, just like Jews have halakha or Catholics have canon law. Just because we want to observe certain dietary standards, that we have a certain type of religious education that we prefer for our children, that we have certain marital rights, that we have certain ways in which we like to see our wills executed according to our religious beliefs, in no way or shape or form does this mean that we are trying to introduce anything that would circumvent the Constitution of the United States of America.
Some of the underlying concerns are that Sharia law is that it doesn't separate church and state, which is a key tenet of the U.S. legal system. Is that, in fact, an accurate assessment?
Sharia, again, is a way that a Muslim would want to live their life in obedience to God. The Sharia in no way says that a Muslim should not obey the laws of the land that it lives in, so laws of the land that a Muslim lives in. For instance, there's 57 Muslim-majority countries, and out of the 57 Muslim-majority countries, the vast majority of them have some type of parliamentary system that's based off of British legal code or French legal code. So even in Muslim-majority countries, there's mosque everywhere, there's call to prayers, there's women who wear headscarves, and at the same time, there's parliamentary systems or codes of law that are similar to the British or French that colonialized the majority of the Muslim world.
I'm talking to Dawood Waleed. He's the executive director of the Michigan branch of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Dawood, what's the biggest misconception that Americans have when it comes to Sharia law and how the Muslim community feels about having a legal system that includes its tenets?
Well, I think the biggest mis- conception is that Muslims somehow aren't following their Sharia or their path to pleasing God, while at the same time being dutiful, law-abiding American citizens. That's the biggest misconception of them all. And again, you know, as a practicing Muslim, as a Muslim leader, and I've traveled to 17 different countries, and I can say without a doubt that in the United States of America, Muslims are about as free to practice their religion under our democratic republic than Muslims are in most of the countries within the Muslim world. We have a way of life in which we have duties, or we have a responsibility between ourselves with our Creator. We also have a moral and ethical code that can't be necessarily endorsed or legislated by laws in any land, that is a person's relationship between God and how they act with other people. And then there is an aspect of Islam that relates to a judicial system with crimes, how cases are heard and with punishment.
Well, it seems like the thing that probably concerns most Americans when they look at countries that operate under Sharia law are the exactly what you mentioned, which is the punishments for certain crimes like adultery, which can be very severe. How do you respond to concerns of those types when you see when they do see that the way, you know, people are either potentially either put to death or stoned, these types of things?
Well, those situations only take place in two countries out of the 57 Muslim majority countries, and I would say to those individuals who think that, I think that just as how those systems could be reformed, and I don't agree completely with the judicial systems of Saudi Arabia or Iran, those are two countries I'm talking about, I think that before we get to be too judgmental, we need to look at the United States of America, in which we hold 5% of the world's population, and yet we have 20% of the incarcerated population of the world within our borders, and we are one of the leading countries in the world of executing people. And that's not what I say, that's Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch. We by far execute more people in the United States of America for crimes than Saudi Arabia or Iran combined. So I think that if we want to talk about the humaneness of how people are incarcerated, how they're treated, and how they're executed, I think that we don't need to be so sanctimonious in terms of how we do things, because we have a lot of improvement that we can do in our criminal justice system here in these United States of America.
Now, when it comes to some of these punishments that we talked about in Iran and Saudi Arabia, do American Muslims generally reject that aspect of the Sharia law?
Well, it's not, again, when I say Sharia is not a fixed codex of law. We have a judicial system here in the United States of America. We follow the judicial system, and we respect it in the land that we live in. And those punishments that we don't agree with, then we can voice our concerns regarding those punishments, those situations. But in the United States of America, there's no really talk or discussion about whether someone is caught drinking liquor and get whipped. The punishment of getting whipped 40 times in front of a Muslim judge. Those types of that's not even an item of discussion, because it's not even plausible here in the United States of America.
Another concern that critics of Sharia have is the rights of women. They feel that they have much, much more limited rights a lot of times, that they need to get the approval of their husbands for certain activities. How do you respond to those concerns when it comes to women's rights?
Well, a lot of those concerns are culturally based, not religiously based. But, you know, if we're talking about the three most, let's backtrack and talk about women's rights in Islam and in Muslim countries. The three most populous countries in the Muslim world have all had female heads of state, and I'm speaking of Indonesia, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. We've yet to have a female president here in the United States of America. If we go to many countries throughout the Muslim world, some of the leading academics in universities, entrepreneurs, they're going about their lives. Some of them are more powerful than their husbands. They're not asking for their husband's permission. So, I mean, I think that, again, we're going back to misconceptions. There's a lot of misconceptions. Muslims, we take our our holy book, and we take certain old texts of jurisprudence and we interpret them within the contemporary context. It's just like, like most Christians these days, although polygamy is practiced amongst some Christians in sub-Saharan Africa, or maybe there's some other type of punishments that may be seen as arcane, like for instance in Uganda, they have death penalty for homosexuals in Uganda, and that's a Christian majority country with basically a Christian fundamentalist state. But no one judges Christianity worldwide by Uganda. And I would say to my fellow Michiganians that don't judge how Muslims see Sharia or living a life by pleasing God by Saudi Arabia being the only country in the world not allowing women to drive a vehicle.
Finally, Dawood, we're nearing the 10th anniversary of 9/11 with no further terrorist attacks within the U.S. Would you say the prejudice against American Muslims has dramatically subsided since the initial reaction some had right after the attacks?
Well, according to our stats and looking at the stats of the Department of Justice, actually discrimination and hate crimes have gone up against Muslims. They haven't gone down since 9/11, and I think that part of the issue, and I said before at the press conference, that unfortunately there's a small strand, but very vocal strand of Islamophobes and people who have affiliated themselves with the GOP who are fomenting Islamophobia. I mean, if we look at national figures such as Newt Gingrich or Michelle Bachmann, they've helped contribute to this non-existent Sharia scare. Or this non-existent threat of Sharia taking over America. They've been in presidential debates and on national TV. They're the ones who are talking about the Park 51 community project last year in Lower Manhattan that wasn't even at Ground Zero and not even meant to be a mosque and made it into a national controversy stirring up emotions. So, I mean, I think that, as we Muslims need to do a better job at outreach and being involved in the community so that the broader public can see what we're really about. I think that some of these national figures, and unfortunately majority of them claim to be within the GOP, they need to be held accountable by their colleagues in regards to them helping foment anti-Muslim prejudice in our country.
Dawood Waleed, the executive director of the Michigan branch of the Council on American Islamic Relations. Thank you for joining me, Dawood.
Thank you very much, sir.
And we'll be right back with more. I'm Michael Cohen. You're listening to 1320 WILS.